We made a few mistakes playing.
Probably the first one being not an especially thorough reading of the rule book.
I'm a visual learner. I can't read any rule book and be like, oh, okay, I understand how that game plays. If I have someone show me or there's a YouTube video that is like very clear, got it.
Most of the rule books come with pictures.
Even if they did, that is not, I need to just see it moving around. You can't tell from a still picture how to play a game. You can find out how to lay out your cards.
What happens when we have to write a rule book?
Honestly, QR code to a video.
That sounds like a lot of work.
You don't think we're going to make a video of us playing this game that we can't then share? That's the challenging piece of making the board game.
Making the video?
The couple of hours it's going to take to make the video.
No, but that won't be comprehensive enough to answer any questions that somebody will come up with for how does this game work?
Sure. I think we should have a rule book, but I also think in our rule book should be a QR code to us playing the game.
I see. I can get behind that.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we don't know how to use an abacus. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. It's very confusing. Two rows.
Also, like, finicky. These particular ones are, like, finicky to use. Like, I was getting stuck when I had to reload to move from ones to tens.
Did you think ones was the top and tens was the bottom?
I played ones was white and tens was color.
I did tens on the top and ones on the bottom. I don't remember the colors. Okay. Where are we?
Summer mode. We have spent a lot of time talking about dating game, Star-Crossed Realms. Summer availability and planning has changed our availability and what we've been able to work on this last couple of months. And so we're letting Star-Crossed Realms simmer for a little bit, and we're moving on to some other features of the project that we want to give attention to. This week, we played this game, Arcana Rising, with our eye on, one, playing more games, because we've said we need to play more games, and two, starting to look at games from a more analytical lens, not just did we like this game, did Jason win, did Mark win, but more with this like analytical eye for how is this game constructed, the physical features, the way the mechanics play. And so we played, and that was the plan.
I really like that we stepped away from Star-Crossed Realms for what is probably going to be a few weeks. I think in my head when this project started, it was going to be, this is the game we're building. Let's figure out what it is. Let's brainstorm that. And let's only talk about that game. Let's only talk about the process of making that game. This is the process. The process isn't this straight line that just follows this one game. The process is you and I becoming game designers and building a game, whether that's the first thing we thought of, the second thing we thought of, or the thing we haven't thought of yet. I think we're showing the process. I think if you've been listening to our episodes, it's not just a straight line like, oh, you should listen to this podcast. They're talking about this game and they're making it and they're making it better and they're building it and they're doing. We're kind of going lots of different places, but I think that's right.
I think that's right for us. When we had Leonie on the show, she was like, I had this singular idea, and her story is more unique because there was a lot more like full-time 100% investment, but she like locked herself in a room, wrote the game, printed out the game, and had the game, and that was it. And I think there are other people where the concept, the idea is there, and then it's just like, what do I do to make this happen? We didn't come to the project with that idea. We're coming to the project, like you said, with this eye of, what are the skills and things we need to learn in order to make a game? And it's going to take us more time to get to, here's the idea.
Yes. And so one of those things was playing more games. What was our objective when we played Arcana Rising? What did we say we were going to do? We didn't just sit down to play the game and just have fun. We had some goals in mind.
We wanted to look at the architecture of the game, how the game is built. What are the mechanics? What are the physical elements or the physical components of the game? And where was the interaction in the game? Before we start, this week's episode is brought to you by Capoeira Brazil SF. Capoeira Brazil SF offers Capoeira classes at Soul Yoga and Movement in San Francisco's North Beach. Capoeira is an Afro-Brazilian cultural art that features martial arts, music, and acrobatics. They offer beginner-friendly movement classes to train and learn in a warm, supportive community. Come try your first class for free. Capoeira Brazil SF is hosting a six-week beginner series starting August 22nd. Find them on Instagram at Capoeira Brazil SF. That's Brazil with an S. What are we working on?
Playing more games, which is fun. We get to play more games. That's fun. It's also kind of, I don't want to say our job. I don't think we've seen the Misplay as our job. We've seen it as our hobby, passion project, thing we really want to do. It is fun, though, to say to my wife, I got to go play these games with Mark. I'm sorry. Doing my work.
Well, you've also been racking up more time in games than I have because you're playing, what, Gloomhaven, Frosthaven. You just played Arcana Rising.
All the Havens.
All the Havens. Are there more Havens?
I don't think so.
Is there Cryptid Haven?
No. I've been lucky. I've been able to play a lot of games lately, which is good because I have said so many times during this process that you don't know what you don't know. And I've always felt like any game I would create, there's a 50% chance that game already exists. There's just so many games out there. And coming into this, I hadn't played that many games. In fact, when I came into this, the first couple of episodes, I used Gloomhaven as like, I'm never doing that. I'm never spending that much time on one game, one campaign. But here I am.
How many months later?
A couple months. We're working our way through the campaign. All the campaigns. Online campaigns. In-person campaigns.
You sound busy.
And yet, we made some time to play Arcana Rising. I did not know what the game was going to be. Mark just showed up with the game. I said to him, hey, what are we going to play? He goes, I don't know yet. I'm going to go over to my friends. I'm going to grab some board games and I'll be over.
So when I raided their closet, Arcana Rising kind of fit the description that I gave. We needed something that we could learn in under an hour and something that we could play in under an hour and a half.
We learned the game within a half an hour, right?
Yeah, all stumbling aside, like it is a very quick game to learn.
We've made mistakes, of course, but we learned how to play the game in about a half an hour. Break down the game, Mark, not more than 2 minutes to our listeners who was like, oh, I haven't played that game. What is that about?
Arcana Rising is a tableau builder where each player is going to build a vertical tableau. You're in columns. So you have your starter board that has the schools of magic that you can draft, and then you build your schools vertically. Each player starts a round with 6 cards in their hand. They're going to draft 1 card to add to their tableau or cast a spell, and then they're going to trade hands and repeat that process until there are no cards left. As you build your tableau, you start working in your engine building mechanic. Every time you cast a spell, instead of adding a card to your tableau, you will get the effects that you have based on the available spell types that are determined by a middle row that's randomly assigned. They're like little chips that you put in the middle. When you choose to cast a spell, there are 2 types of spells that are available to be cast each turn. The objective of the game is to score the most victory points. You score points by having an efficient engine and by the way that your resources are distributed at the end of the game.
Excellent. Let's talk first about the mechanics of the game. When we're thinking about the mechanics of the game, this was the list that we came up with. There is the draft element. You talked about passing cards. Tableau, where you're building, the artifact and events and spells that you're casting. There's resource management piece to the game. There are tiered cards. And then I think the final piece is like, it's all engine building. Did I capture the mechanics there?
Yes, I think so. I think that breakdown, at least for us, gives us the framework that we wanted to have in order to talk more critically about the game or more analytically about the game.
And the first thing I'll say is, kind of listing all of those mechanics and then going back to the first game that I built, Mark versus Jason, or the second game, Supermarket Game, I think I used like 1 or 2 of those, but not this many, right? I wasn't putting this many mechanics into my game. I wasn't there yet because it was the early stages of all of those games. So it was cool to start thinking about, you know, because I play Settlers of Catan, I play Gloomhaven, but I don't stop and ever think about, oh, what are the mechanics of this game? So doing that with you was interesting and starting to like list them out and see that there's a lot of them.
I think there are a lot, but I do think they play well together. Like drafting with a tableau builder is not necessarily something that I would have considered, but I actually think it worked really nicely. I guess the first piece, when we talk about drafting, we're talking about, I look at my set of cards, I choose the card that I'm going to take, and then I'm going to either use that card to do my, to add to my tableau or fire my engine. And then I'm going to pass the remaining cards to you. And that exchange is kind of the one of the primary features, right? That happens the most throughout the game.
Yeah.
And was one of the main like points of interaction between us, right?
I think that was the only interaction between us. There were some spells later on that I think you had one that you could steal from my discard, right? You thought it was for my board.
I wished it was for your board. The next most prominent feature was the tableau builder feature, right?
And before you talk about that, I'll say, just for anyone listening who is still a little confused by like tableau, because before the biome episode, before Leonie, if you told me tableau, it would be one of those things I would hear and be like, oh, I don't quite know what they're talking about, but whatever. I'm not going to stop and look it up. It's like, whatever. It's a gaming thing. When we say tableau, we're talking about essentially the space in front of you where you're using the pieces of the game to build out whatever it is you're doing. In this particular game, you were building out spells underneath like a, what would you call them? Like classifications, categories, like?
Yeah, they were spell types in the game. We laid them out in columns corresponding to the spell type that they fit with.
And so when we say tableau, we're just talking about the space in front of you where you're putting all the things that you're using.
The new or unique feature of this version, this tableau for me, was that it was oriented vertically, because all the others I've played kind of, you just build out a rectangle.
It's funny you say that, because you've said that twice now on the podcast. And this is still how we think about games. I still think you think about games so much more detailed than I do. I never would have written that down as like, oh, this is a feature of the game. The tableau is vertical versus the tableau is horizontal. Like, I love that you think about it that way.
The vertical columns were an important feature of this tableau builder, because when we got to the last turn of each round, if you were casting spells, you got to cast all of your types of spells, but you only got to cast the card that was at the bottom of your column.
Correct.
So it did have this like component of the way your column was designed mattered.
It did matter. And in fact, there were some cards that, and I don't think we got them in the play, but I was looking at cards that allowed you to cast the cards in a column, but like not the ones in the longest column.
Yeah, you're talking about the event cards and the artifacts, which were kind of the other cards that were available for purchase in the game. So spells were the cards that got added to our tableaus primarily. And then there were two other types of cards. There were artifacts and there were events. Artifacts were a persistent card that had either a scoring or some other effect. And then events were these one-time moments where they would have an immediate impact on the game and then be added to your discard pile. I think, Jason, you've played more resource management games than me. How did this stack up for, in terms of like the way it played, the way resources were used, how you thought about the complexity of management? How did this version of resource management strike you?
That is one of the reasons why it would be a good idea to continue to play this game, so I can give you a better answer to that question, because I kind of narrowed in. I saw a strategy that made sense to me based on the cards that I had in my opening hand both times, both games, and I locked into it, right? So in that first game, I locked into the feature where I was building cards on my herbology column, and I was fortunate enough to continue to keep getting those cards. And so I locked into that one strategy where I would just cast spells and I was always racking up either victory points or I was racking up resources regardless of what I was casting. And I kind of like just utilized that. And then the second game, again, I saw herbology and charms. And so it made sense to me that I was building. And I understood how to do it. I understood, you know, what cards I should be looking for, what cards would utilize the resources that I'm stacking. But I would have loved to have explored more of the options, because I was watching you play. And in the first game, I was like, I have no idea what you're doing. You have all of those resources on the blood column. And I'm like, blood is -1 victory points at the game. So I'm like, I know Mark's going to do something. I know he's going to move him off, but I don't know how he's going to do it yet.
Yeah, I was on this like blood magic and alchemy plan in the first game. And this is also something where, again, playing the game more would be interesting because I think we still have this limited survey of here are the mechanics. I do think each of the five schools kind of had its own mechanical identity. And so while we're not going to go into the explicitly detailed specifics of each category, each of the five spell types did have its own kind of like mechanical space that it held within the game.
I'm sure they're relatively balanced, but I just kind of like locked in on the ones that I saw right away.
Yeah, it didn't feel like either game was a runaway. We were within like 5 to 7 points of each other in both games.
Yeah.
So on balance, like it does seem reasonably balanced from our sample size of two. The next kind of piece for me was the way cards were tiered, these three very distinct rounds of play. And each round had its own deck of cards that would be used to build your tableau with.
And you see that in a lot of games. You see that in Seven Wonders Duel. You see that in Innovation. All kinds of games use that. And it makes sense.
Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, like I even tried a less detailed version of that in MMA Gauntlet where I had like the upgrade deck.
Yeah, that's right. Champions and Veterans.
Hey, look at you remembering language from the games.
MMA Gauntlet's a great game.
It's nice of you to say.
If we don't build it, somebody should.
I like the tiered cards as a feature of games. I think it works nicely and helps the feeling of progression. The last piece that goes kind of hand in hand with the resource management piece was the engine building component. The whole reason to build your tableau in this game is when you cast spells, you trigger your chain reaction of as many things as you can. And I guess kind of same question. I think you've played more engine building style of games than I have. What are your takeaways from this version of an engine builder?
I thought it had a good balance for what we wanted out of it, right? We wanted to play a game that wasn't a really long game, that wasn't difficult to learn. I don't think it was overly complicated. I think just looking at the cards, glancing at the first tier of the cards, you had a sense that, as I said, all of those factions probably had a reliable way to win the game. And I felt like it was engaging to try to figure out what I wanted to do. It was in line with a lot of other resource building games. You do X, Y happens. You can do X over here, and you can make Y happen over here, and then you can see the synergy. You saw the synergies between the different factions.
The thing that struck me about this one, beyond like being able to see a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, if you will, was I actually really enjoyed how you were forced to try to be really efficient in the way that you built, because you're only going to have a maximum of 18 cards, and that's if you don't ever cast, which is probably wrong. So your engine is very limited.
We finished the game and I said to you, I don't know if I played this right, but I only have like six cards. I only have six spells on my board.
I felt the same way in game two, because my strategy going into the third full round of six cards was I'm just going to cast every round because I'm done building. So I thought the need for efficiency and the making sure you're getting like high impact cards frequently felt really important, because you didn't have the liberty to like do these like cheeky little like one for one types of things, because the amount of time in the game that you lose preparing something small like that doesn't give you a big enough return because of how short the game is. So with that as kind of the brief introduction survey of the mechanics, what did you feel like were the highs and the lows mechanically for you?
I mean, I'm always a sucker for draft. It's the only magic we play. We really enjoy games where there's draft. So I think for me, the drafting element was probably the thing that I liked the most. If I was going to steal something for my game, I really enjoy engine building. I really enjoy creating a plan and then executing it and seeing it work. I really like that. I really like being able to like think about what it is I want to do, get the pieces I need, and then watch it work.
How about your mechanical low? What didn't feel like it fit for you?
I don't know. Nitpicking, right? I mean, because we enjoyed playing the game, but it felt kind of like a hodgepodge of things. It felt like there were kind of all these things that you do in other games already, that there wasn't like that one unique selling point to it for me. I've done draft, you know, tableaus, I've cast spells, you know, there's the tiered cards in lots of games, and you're building engines. And so to me, I guess that was the one piece that I'd be like, there wasn't like this one really unique thing where I can say to somebody, hey, you should play this game because you get to do this thing. For example, Wavelength is a game that we've played recently that I think has a mechanic that I would lead with. I would say, guys, you got to try this game. This is really cool mechanic where you're, you know, you're setting this dial where you want your partner to correctly guess. So for me, that was the one thing missing, that it just wasn't like unique in the mechanics. What about you? What was a high? What was a low?
My high, I agree with you. I love the drafting component. I also really enjoyed and was definitely overloaded on was actually really like the way that passing the cards works, because you have so much information about what's available and you're like doing a little bit of guesswork about what card is going to come back to me or what card do I need to remove. I really liked the way that that drafting played into your long-term planning for the round or for the game, to the point where my low, I know I've kind of said that I really like how short and efficient the game is. I don't think the game would be too long or become inefficient in the way that it plays if there were maybe two more full rounds.
Okay.
I was always a little bit bummed that there are like 150 plus cards in this game.
And you played six.
And I got to play eight, like six, between like six and 12 of them.
Right? Casted six, but played the other ones.
Or... Right. And so there's this aspect of like, I want to find other cards. Now I can find other cards by getting through more playthroughs, but
yeah, because like, I was like discarding ones I thought you would want and just playing them face down. So that's how I cast it. I got rid of a card that I thought you would want. So
yeah, so I would have liked to see maybe one to two more rounds where you could get more synergistic pieces in your engine.
I feel like Family Feud right now. Good answer. Good answer. Good answer. Let's look at the board. Good answer.
It just felt really brutal. It felt efficient to kind of like a very like brutal and austere way. I would also like, I kind of echo your concern about the uniqueness or like your observation about the uniqueness, more so in that I didn't find myself super immersed in the flavor of the game. Like, you know, when we talked about MMA Gauntlet, you were like, this could be like fish fighting each other. This could be right. A space battle.
Right.
I felt a little bit that way about this game also.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, that leads a little bit to the physical design elements of the game.
Oh man, we're back to talking about art. This is going to go poorly for us.
Yeah, we're not. No one should take our opinion on art seriously. And I said to you while we're playing this game, I'm a little colorblind. I don't know which one it is exactly, but when you do those colorblind tests, people can see the number and I can't. So I don't know what it is exactly. And I've always said that I refuse to acknowledge more than 10 colors. So you shouldn't take what I say about art too seriously. Didn't like the physical elements of this game. I didn't like how the box looked. I didn't like how the board looked. I found the blue and the purple to be similar when they should have been exact. I don't know. Like it felt too dark to me. Everything. I had a hard time differentiating the things on my tableau at times. Was not a fan of the color scheme.
I think that's fair. Coming from the guy who's like, I would play in black and white and only text. Also, like, I know that you don't like foil cards in Magic.
Right.
Or like foil cards and other things.
Right.
So like the glossy finish on the box, I think to a wider audience without some of our more practical sensibilities, it might be appealing. But like for me, I agree. The glossy on the box didn't work for me. I didn't mind the dark tone of the art. I thought like it was trying to feed into this like hidden mystic kind of experience. Like the drawings or the art on the cards I thought was cool, but it was just hard to get immersed in it.
Tell me a game you've been immersed in though. Let's set some sort of baseline.
The Tokyo game that we played for my birthday.
Oh, King of Tokyo.
Yeah. Like
you felt like you were a monster fighting in a arena?
I did. I had my like very clear like cardboard cut out of my dude.
Yeah.
I like there was a very visceral experience of like putting it into the place where it's going to fight, taking it out.
Okay.
I could see it. I could imagine it. Now, like, I wasn't like, I didn't have this whole like headcanon story going on in my head, but I did have that more visceral experience of playing it.
That's a good baseline.
I loved the round counter tokens though.
Yeah, they felt like little poker chips. I really like them too.
I thought the heavy tokens with the larger symbol representing each school made the symbols pop for me.
I mixed them up once. Remember?
I mixed up. Just weren't looking closely.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I thought they were similar.
I think only for blood and potion. I think it's fair to be like, those are a little bit similar. I did do a double take to look at them a couple of times, but eventually like,
see?
But like 2 out of 5. And also it still didn't impede my ability to read the cards. And I like the design of those symbols. I thought they were nice. I thought those symbols worked nicely with the flavor intention that they had. The boards felt nice. I thought the boards were laid out well. They gave space. They didn't require too much table space, but they were set up in a way that the feel of the cards was good, and they allowed for like a clean layout of each column.
Yeah. And, you know, and the board in the middle, that little cutout that we put the tokens in, with that the circle cut out, and you like something about placing something in where it belongs has a nice feel.
Mm-hmm. The player boards also had a really nice clear feature of here's your discard pile, here's where your artifacts go. They were to the sides of it, but like the design was there. Like it was easy to be like, okay, I'm discarding and casting a spell, it goes here. I'm adding my artifact to the board, it goes here. It didn't interfere with reading your columns for your spells. That was really clean and well done.
One of the things, we had 2 bags of these, what would you call them? They were like the extra, they had like a potion and a bag image.
Oh yeah, the tokens. It was like potion and blood tokens.
And there were like 2 big bags of them. And I think I used 3 max the whole, both games. And again, because that was probably an element of the game that I wasn't comfortable with yet, so I kind of avoided those cards. I did have a little trouble trying to figure out what those symbols on it meant and what I was supposed to do with them.
Yeah, most of those, I played with them a little bit in game 2. Most of them were for marking potions or adding tokens to like blood cards for counting. And to be fair, like they had those large bags because this game does scale from 2 to 6 players. And so on, sometimes you're going to need more pieces than you have. We were even running out of the ones for the resource counters sometimes.
It's because I was hoarding them and I wasn't upgrading to the 5.
Sure, but like,
if there were other people,
yeah,
you'd have to like actually do it and not be a guy like me.
Not be a hoarder. Jason is a dragon. So with all that said about the physical components of the game, the way that we thought about the mechanics and the mechanics that were present in the game, one of the things that has come up for us a couple of times in our games, in the way that we talk about what we want out of our game and in our playthrough of this game, where was the interaction in this game?
The only real interaction in this game was the draft piece, where I was taking a card and then physically handing you the remaining cards. And I was thinking about what you were going to take next and what I was going to get back. Or I was thinking, what do I want to just get rid of and not allow Mark to have access to? I think that was it.
Yeah, that's definitely the primary source of the interaction in the game, the way that I think about it. And we also mentioned like there are event cards that seem to have the potential to have a little bit of interaction with your, at least with your opponent's stuff.
Yeah, there was one where you had a card where you could have dug into my discard. Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
So I guess not totally accurate by me that there were some other ways. Like you had said a couple of times, there were a lot of cards. There were a lot of tiered cards, and we didn't get to play all. We only played a few.
So then coming back to it, because I think this is a game that we would play a few more times to break our tie, to get a little bit better sense of the game, maybe to have a wider understanding of the mechanics and the way, like, I'd be interested in seeing what's the mechanical identity of each school or style of magic in the game. But I don't think this is a game that we would play for long term, because we want different things out of our interaction in the game. So when we think about what we want interaction to be in the game, how would you describe the kind of interaction in a game that you want that you're going to build?
I want to make meaningful decisions that affect you and that you have to deal with, encounter, or, you know, in StarCross Realms, use to your advantage. I want to feel like the things I'm doing, I am choosing to do, and then they affect you in some way, whether positively or negatively.
I think that's a nice way of describing it. I would only add, I want the information, I want the actions that I take and the information that those actions give, I want those to be useful to the person that I'm playing with. Again, whether that's like a teamwork thing or whether that's a competitive thing, you know, like Magic the Gathering, it's like, I'm going to play my lightning bolt on your 3/3. And now you're like, well, I'm going to play my plus 3/3. But the information, the decisions that I make give information and force or allow for potential change. I know that's a very narrow example, but I think that piece of things that I do give information and allow you to make different decisions about what you will do next, the core of what I think of is interaction in a game.
And I'll make it real. I'll use this game as an example, something we could add to it. We could place the tiles instead of randomly. We could place them ourselves. Remember when the random tiles were coming out and I was getting so mad at you for pulling them out of the bag so randomly? Because the cards that I wanted to cast, I didn't want to do early in the rounds. I wanted to do them later. And so if I had the opportunity to place one and set it down and feel like I'm more involved in that decision, I would feel like I'm impacting the game with my super awesome strategy.
Yeah, that would be a cool way to add. You had elements of this in Supermarket Game where the cards that you could buy with your gold or your money, you could use to do things to your partner that would then necessitate them to do something different.
Right.
I think it was less prevalent in MMA Gauntlet. I think I would argue MMA Gauntlet is a low interaction game.
I think we were trying to build it with the training cards. I think we were trying to create more variety in what those training cards could do.
Yeah, once we got to, you could mess around with the order during the fight sequence.
Yes.
I think then the game became much more interesting to me.
I think that was a really good idea that you had to have us play a game and for us to think about it from the mechanics, the physical, the interaction piece, and come on the show and talk about it. This is a good reminder and a good thing that we want to show the audience what we're doing to become better game designers.
Well, I think we're going to have more opportunities to play a lot of games because of what's coming up next.
The next episode, Mark and I are going for the very first time, Mark and I are going to Gen Con. And I'll say it, I'm excited.
I'm stoked.
Mark and I are going there to observe, to play games, to hang out, to see what it looks like, to get a feel for what that space in the board design space looks like.
Our faithful guide and patron Mike C is going to be showing us the Gen Con ropes. We've got our lineup of events that we're going to, games that we're going to get to play, things we're going to check out. I'm really secretly hoping to go meet a game designer from a tabletop game that I'm playing with some of my high school friends. And again, just to see what do final products look like. There will be, like, I'm sure there will be new indie games that are being marketed at Gen Con. If that's the dream, what does the final product look like? What's something to aspire towards?
And while we say it's like 90% just to experience it, there'll be 10% trying to figure out what other people are doing and to get some contacts and a little bit of networking. Mark and I are going to record a live episode. Next week's episode is going to be us giving you the rundown and explaining everything that we're doing at Gen Con and letting you know where we're going to be. And hopefully maybe we'll meet some of you at Gen Con.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Oddjoes, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord. There are two types of spells that are available each round. I did it again. There are two types of spells that are available to be cast each turn. Do I have to do it again? Jason can just like hear the annoyance with myself in my voice.
I know. You do have to like.
There are two types of spells that are available to be cast each turn. There are two types of spells that are...